Guy newspaper of the 30th of September. There's a story about Ghana's very popular finance minister, the Honourable Kujumba Mbidu, who died suddenly in South Africa. Members of his family, thinking that the guy who contested the parliamentary primary against him was responsible for his death, had started organising groups of young men to lynch him. Thankfully, the chief of the area called the family to his palace and asked them to stop making such inflammatory statements. And here's another article, Ritual Murder Hits Accra. Inside, there's a very gruesome photograph of a young boy of around 9 who was found murdered. The way he's killed, the way his body has been dismembered and his genitalia removed, suggests that he was killed for ritual purposes. So, if people believe in witchcraft, it's very likely that there are others who will use that belief for their own purposes. Ghana was the first country in Black Africa to gain independence from Britain. I imagine that our leaders back then hoped that development and Christianity would change our thinking. But countless economic upheavals seem to reinforce traditional religious beliefs in which the spirit world is every bit as important as the world of the living.
Nobody dies naturally. They either were killed by somebody, but there's also a spiritual cause.
When you come to the Christians, we have lots of the charismatic churches feeding on people's fear about witchcraft. Sometimes you have some pastors telling you that your problems are all caused by your mother or by that old lady in that house. When a woman cannot have children, she's either a witch or is a victim of witchcraft. And usually the person who's accused of having caused her inability to have children will be another woman.
A few days ago, a colleague of mine was swearing to me that they are child, basically, was about 8 or 9, was a witch. Then I kept saying, oh, come on, do you have children? Can you imagine it being suggested that your child was a witch? She says, no, but the child confessed. I said, anybody can confess to any kind of thing if they're pressured enough.
Women can never do anything right. The woman is poor. That's the reason for her being branded as a witch. The woman can be very rich, and that can be a reason for her being branded as a witch.
Back at the camp in Gambaga, it's now 3 days since the new inmate, San Marta, was condemned for witchcraft. And Laraba pays her a visit to see how she's settling down.
The first day is not easy. Some will grieve after 3-4 days. Some even after 1 week, they still grieve. But with time, they used to settle and then they forget of it. And then the others. She's sad because the children haven't come to see how she's feeling. She's not happy.
Old or young, rich or poor, no woman is exempt from the taint of witchcraft. Azara was once a prosperous trader with a restaurant and a house of her own. During an outbreak of meningitis, she was one of 3 successful women accused of starting the epidemic.
Come on, Annie. This is what I'm talking about. Ah,
the case with Zanabo. When her husband's family accused her of witchcraft, she returned to her father's house. But then she decided to move to the witch's camp. Unfortunately, Zanabo's husband had a stroke and had to return to his village. When Zanabo's mother was accused of witchcraft as well, she followed Zanabo's example and chose to stay at the camp to help raise her grandchildren. By the fourth day of her life as a witch, the new inmate, Salmata, has moved from the shelter of Maha's hut into the open. Some women are allowed to visit family members. I arranged to meet Azara, the businesswoman thrown out of her neighborhood during a meningitis epidemic, on one of her brief visits to her brother in Gushegu. It's likely that when she finally leaves the camp, this is where Azara will live. She decided to go back to see what's become of her home.
Shut up. Sanctuary, but the women pay him for it, and they also
She told me that she has no plans in the present to return home, but she hopes that very soon her children will come for her. Zanabo's determination to concentrate on her children's education has paid off. Her son is the first child of the camp to attend secondary school. The women were so proud of his success that to help Zanabo pay his school fees, they organized a collection for him.
Very nice. It's a beautiful photograph, Zanabo with her two children, Smila and Hannah.
I asked Zanabo what her hopes were for her son's future.
Their hope is that Smila should complete successfully and get a job, that she will go back to the village and build a house and take care of home.
After 11 years at the camp, Azara was planning to return home. She'd almost finished rebuilding her old house and wanted to go back in the new year. She believed that she'd be safe because after filming with me and other film crews, she'd become a local celebrity. When a woman accused of being a witch is brought before him, he seizes the opportunity to counsel the family concerned to find out what's really going on. Simon and Laraba's visits to Paragu to help Alima and Agrabah settle down seem to have worked. Alima is flourishing. After the grinding poverty of life at the witches' camp, they are being looked after well by their families.
Something that should be eradicated.
government has to come in and be proactive. The community has to be educated and to accept the fact that these women are not abnormal and that they are part of the community. And I think with time, the practice will die out.
Custody has gone up to over $100.